and welcome to episode 261 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, artist of the Monster Spotters Club, and joining me this week are the creator of Iron Eagle, Dan Butcher.
Hey, it's me. Hello.
And the writer behind How to Make Comics with Springworth, Tony Esmond.
Hey, it's lovely to be here.
It's wonderful.
That's a little callback to Vince's voice earlier.
Yeah, I made a weird sort of voice just before. I don't know why, but anyone who's met me probably knows why, because I'm a weirdo.
It was like you were when you were a children's entertainer in the in Butlins.
In Butlins. Never been to a Butlins.
And the reason you've given us that amended intro is because we've got all our work in the new issue of the Spark magazine.
Yes, we have. Yeah. I got mine. Have you had yours? You both had yours.
Yeah, my comp copies turned up on Saturday.
Got mine.
You got comp copies? Paid for mine.
Yeah. I did back the Kickstarter.
So, oh, me too. I did it twice. Yeah. Then. Oh well.
Yeah. Double dipped.
Yeah, looks good, man. Our gag. I'm definitely putting it on the T-shirt. Our favourite gag, Vince.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil it because no. Ours is a one-page comic, so that would give away 75% of the.
I would love to see this on a fucking in a shop, like
me too,
by the tills.
Yeah, well,
stick it in the trolley.
I mean, it's quite appropriate that we're talking about kids' comics that are front and centre for parents everywhere because yes, we've got a guest this week, and we're talking about an institution in comics, especially in the UK. We're talking about the Beano. But not just that, the brilliant artist Laura Howell is joining us.
Yeah, very illuminating.
So, yeah, we just had an interview there. Well, it's not an interview. We don't really do interviews. We just chat, don't we?
Yeah, I say stupid things and you ask sensible questions. That's kind of how
well,
it goes.
Well, I try to, and then like we just end up looking like idiots. Although two things did come from this sort of interview. We asked a good question.
We got told that, didn't we? I was very pleased with this.
Yeah. And what else? We did something else.
I asked her about amphetamines.
No, it wasn't that.
Okay.
But that is coming up very shortly. I mean, we've had 260 odd episodes of this show. And yeah, we've mentioned the name of Beano a few times, but this is the first time we've talked about that sort of area of comics, which is long overdue. Even if you don't read it, folks, because I know there's a lot of Marvel, DC or indie readers out there. It's a weekly comic that's entertaining kids, and it's still going, and it's doing amazing work. And they're also very sensible about the way they publish it, especially during this lockdown period, which you're going to learn as well. And not only that, in 2019, it had its 4,000th issue. Think about that.
That's quite a few issues, yeah.
Think about that. I can't even make one these days. But
that's more issues than I've got.
Yeah,
well, I mean personal ones. You know?
Yeah, you've got. I mean, to be fair, you have got a lot of issues.
Yeah,
and some Top Gear magazine.
Yeah. Some of them have Stag chrome magazine. Covers.
Knave, one of my favourites.
Yeah. But you know where you can't find any of that nonsense, but you can find Fantastic Comics.
Comic House.
Yes, there it is. Every time we say the name, an angel gets its wings.
We get £9.99.
And obviously our sponsor is pleased. Because our sponsor is Comic House, and we love them. They're an indie comic marketplace with a difference. They really genuinely care about the indie scene, and they want to get comics in front of as many people as they can. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a massive selection of titles on the database. If you self-publish and you've got some issues lying around, not like the sort of issues that Tony has, because no one will ever be able to deal
sexual
with that.
Sexual issues.
Not bad. then you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. They also have a brilliant app that we talk about every week, and we read pretty much every week. I mean, I've saved up a few weeks. I'm going to get stuck in. There's some great stuff on there. What sort of stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Little Spark issue 1, Slaughterhouse Farm 4, which I didn't read this week.
I read it today. Yeah. There's an unfortunate incident with a ball bag in it. I'd like to point that out.
I tell you what, the Hellbound Media guys, I mean, they churn out comics consistently.
This is my favourite thing they've done. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, brilliant.
It's just so nuts.
Yeah.
I look forward to reading it.
And they do, I mean, they do horror books because they love horror, and they do a variety of genres. And like horror, you know, there's something for everyone. And Slaughterhouse Farm is definitely, if you like this sort of stuff, this is.
You want to have sex with a human pig? Yeah. This is right up the street.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, they'll be on the show in the future. Maybe around Halloween. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Yeah, but apart from that, what else they're done?
Juxtaposition to that, we've got Hopper, Detective of the Strange, issue 2. And then Ash, Aman, Special Edition 1. And the title we mentioned last week, we talked about Teddy Boy, issue
and
1.
Also Nerds Who Haunted Themselves, Outstanding in Their Field is on there from Stuart Moraine, which I read today. It's very good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's good to see it's on there.
So you can find all of that and more. And if you want to find out more, then go to comichouse.com, find out about the 14-day free trial. With the code Stay Safe, you can get an extra month as well. And plus, if you create kids comics, get in touch with them, because they're sorting out ways to have an area for kids to read family friendly comics, as well as all that, you know, like we say, the filth that you want to read, the grown up filth. But if you want to read that and make sure your kids can't read that, Comic House will have you sorted as well.
So, and other stuff ready for you. Yeah. And I think we're talking about one later, aren't we? We're talking about another book that's just hit the app.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Let's save our beans on that one.
Yes.
Yeah. and of course, the other important thing I'd like to point out is happy birthday, boys. We're 5 years old today.
Yeah. That's.
I think it's actually tomorrow, but well, Monday. So the day it comes out, 5 years
old. That's snuck up. I think you shared a social media post where. You said, "Oh, the first episode or something."
I did, right.
And I was like, "Bloody hell!"
Five that gone? Years, yeah. I
mean, you did mention about standout episodes and one like stuff that made you really laugh. And there's one that will always stick in my mind. I was commuting into London, and it was a cold morning, cold Monday, Tuesday morning. And I was listening to the podcast, and you'd been at a con, and I can't remember who you interviewed, but it was the Peach Stone one.
It was Matt Harrow, wasn't it?
I fucking doubled over, like on the platform, laughing.
That was the one where I'm trying to interview him, and I said I said, "What are you dressed as today?" And he said, "Vampirella. I'm dressed as Vampirella." I said, "If you bend over, I can see your peach stone." And he couldn't stop. And every time I laughed, I looked at him, and we couldn't stop laughing. So I think half of it is me going, "Stop looking at me. Don't look at me, you're making me laugh."
It's just all that was, you left that all in. I can remember just fucking dying.
Yeah. There's been an awful lot of laughs.
Can I name one of my favourites? Yeah, and this is relevant to today, actually, is my favourite one, not for a funny reason, but for serious reasons, was probably about 3 years ago, we had Andy Clift on. We talked about disability in comics.
Yes.
And I'm really fond of that episode. And I think we did the right thing by that. And it's something that isn't addressed enough. Seems to be a lot of other diversities addressed in comics, but this is never or rarely addressed.
Yeah.
And Andy was a gent and very sensible and very understanding. And he explained a lot of stuff that I didn't really sort of think about beforehand. Yeah. And we talked about it a lot. And as we record, I think now Andy is on a program about disability on BBC Two, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorites.
I was kind of umming and ahhing that episode because there was part of that collective of heroes. We had a new comic join that week called I think it was Handicape. And it was And I was like, should I bring this up or not? And I thought, well, it's a positive comic. And I think Andy was a bit unsure about it when I mentioned it. But he went on to read it and said it was really good. And the guys done like a really taken and really good measured approach to the comic. But unfortunately, I think the creators went on to do something else after that, and that got left by the wayside, which is a real shame.
It is a topic that is hugely important. Is one very close to my heart, and we'll probably revisit as well.
So, and it's something we address in Monster Spots Club as well, don't we, V? Yes. At your behest. Yeah, we talk about that a bit in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the header on, we're talking to Laura, with the header with the Beano, there's different characters in the header image there. Do you know what I mean? It's not just...
Right, good.
So, yeah, I mean, over the past 5 years, you know, this isn't a retro looking back show because I honestly can't
Didn't bother to organise it.
We didn't bother to organise it, and I honestly can't remember anything. In those 5 years, I've read more comics than ever before. I've certainly worked on more comics than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And more things like that. So, and we've met an awful lot of brilliant people. So to all the guests, past, present and future, thank you very much. We love you. And to anyone that's listened to any of the the episodes of this, whether if you listen to one episode and this happens to be it, if you've been with us since the beginning or you picked us up in the last couple of weeks, we don't care. We absolutely love you, and thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, man. We always do. I mean, the first thing I always say to people when they say that they, you know, they listen, I'm always firstly sort of pleasantly surprised, and I sort of thank
them. We always apologise. The go-to is we always go, we're sorry.
But yeah, thanks for kind of, we're trying, like, a little community's built up around the show, and it's all about kind of helping each other out and creating comics and reading comics and just spreading the word and love on something you enjoy doing.
So thank
roll
you.
On 10 years,
yeah,
my friends.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't be here without you lovely people listening, as much as we say, you know, but if it, I mean, we would just probably just have a Skype call every week and not record it the past 5 years. But thank you very much, and we hope you've been entertained as much as we've. Well, we're still having fun, and we're still going to do this. So there's no end in sight. This isn't a numbered episode. This is just Jesus Christ, 5 years. Where did that go? That's what this part of the show is. So we've got other, you know, we've got other milestone issues to deal with in the future. But until then. We've got another guest on this week. Like we said, it's time to talk about... we should be institutionalised, but the Beano is an institution in itself. So it's about time we talk about that. But not just the Beano itself. We talk about the fantastic work of Laura Howell, whether it be in the weekly comics, the workshops, and just genuinely, you know, this is someone who knows their stuff. So get ready for this fantastic interview that is for your listening pleasure. Right now. Okay, this week we are hugely pleased to be joined by a comic creator whose work has been published by the likes of Boom Studios, Mad Magazine, Edgemont Publishing, I think I've said that right, and is best known for entertaining children of all ages in the pages of the Beano. You know who we're talking about. It's Laura Howell, of course.
Hey.
Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Hey. Obviously, a lot of our listeners probably already know who you are. You've got a bit of reputation. Well, not that kind of reputation, Tony. But but you've been with the Beano. You'll probably have a reputation after this episode, because everyone has a bad reputation after they've been on this show.
Yeah.
And obviously you've done like lots of work, but most people probably know you. The fact that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but have you been working with the Beano since 2007?
Yeah, unbelievably, that is correct. So that's 13 years now. 13. Oh my god!
Wow, look at that!
That's great. Get like,
at 15, do you get like a gold watch or something? Is it how it works at the DC Thompson?
No, you get a gold plated pile of mashed potatoes with sausages sticking out.
I was trying to engineer that so I could have that for my tea tonight before we did the show, but it didn't quite come off. But like really do it with like the pile of mash for the sausages stuck in it. That'd be great.
I recommend it.
Yeah. Desperate Dan's got a statue in Dundee. I went up there and saw it.
What? Yeah, it's a bit impressive. Cow pies. He doesn't have mash and sausages, does he?
No, that's true. No, he doesn't. Yeah. Does he? Do you ever go up to the DC Thompson offices? Do you?
In all the time I've worked for the Beano, I've been up there twice. Once was 2008 for the 70th anniversary.
Okay.
And then I actually went up last year as well. That was very cool. But obviously, you know, all the artists work from home and we're scattered around the country, so there's very little opportunity for us to actually visit the office.
Okay. I went out with a guy who used to be the editor at Commando when I was up there last time, and I asked him if he ever goes Commando, and he just sort of stared at me. I was quite drunk at that point. I'd like to make it clear.
And he hasn't spoken to you since.
He hasn't.
I was. I mean, 2007. I mean, that's not that long ago, really. I mean, I know it seems like a long time now, but it is the 2000s. If I always say to myself, it's not that long ago, because if I admit that it was a long time ago, I'll feel really old. But like 13 years, no matter what comics company or genre or field or whatever you follow. Whether it be Superior Comics, Kids Comics, whatever, you know, to stay with a title and with a company for 13 years, that's quite a sort of
pretty unheard of these days.
Yeah. Is that sort of the the case with, like, you know, the guys and girls that work with the Beano, you know, so rather than pop in and pop out, you know, the sort of freelance sort of stuff, there's more a case of like long staying sort of group of creators, do you find?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. There's a bit of a division, I suppose, because obviously there have been dozens and dozens of Beano artists and writers over time that have popped in, popped out, etc. But often when they do find someone that you know, they think gets the Beano style, they do tend to stick around. So, for example, Dave Sutherland, who draws the Bash Street Kids, he has been doing that since, I'm going to say, the 60s. Wow, he was certainly okay. The one that was drawing the Bath Street Kids when I was reading them in, you know, the early 80s. And I think there are several kind of long haulers like that. I mean, he's in his 80s now, so, you know, he's getting on a bit, but he's still drawing it every week.
That's great, isn't it? Yeah, I love it. And it's regular work. That doesn't happen much anymore in comics, does it?
No.
There's probably one of the few places that and maybe Commando covers or something like that. I'm thinking Ian Kennedy or something like that. You know, there's not much of that going on anymore. Even 2000 AD sort of shifts about in, I suppose Carlos was the last one in 2000 AD, was there for many years.
But even with, like, I think with the Beano has like it's a special kind of brand as well, because whereas you find, like, you know, with your 2000 AD, you've got a Judge Dredd, but, you know, every artist that comes to the strip will do their own version of it. But, you know, these older sort of Beano characters are so sort of iconic, aren't they? Their style, I mean, like you say, like Dave Sutherland has been doing that, you know, his style is now part and parcel with the Bash Street Gang and stuff. So whoever, if anyone were to come along and pick that story up afterwards, like, there's probably a pressure to do that rather than their own version of it.
Yeah, you've got to keep it in the house style, haven't you, for a lot of these characters, I suppose. Is that right, Laura? Or
I think, to be honest, that they've changed their policy a little bit as the years have gone on. Because as far as I can gather from talking to people who've worked there for way longer than I have, it very much used to be the case in the past that there was a Beano style and you were expected to hit it. I mean, it wasn't kind of blanket everybody emulate Leo Baxendale. But there was, you know, the editor could look at a sample of artwork and go, oh, that's Beano-y or that's not Beano-y. But certainly over the last decade or so, they seem to have got a lot more open to different art styles. And some they put in, and, you know, they might find after a few months of audience feedback it's not working so well, so they'll kind of discreetly remove it. But there's definitely a willingness to experiment. And certainly when the Dandy was still going, I mean, obviously in a sense it is still going because the annuals and the specials come out every year, but when it was still a weekly comic, towards the last few years of that, there was a tremendous amount of stylistic experimentation.
I remember Jamie Smart did Desperate Dan. Such a stylistic departure, but perfectly fitting for, you know, the audience, and it just worked, didn't it? I think that was a real surprise when I saw he was doing that. I was like, oh wow, you know, Desperate Dan is another one that, you know, when I think of that character, in my mind, I think of the classic, like you say, that sort of house style that I was reading in like the 80s and stuff. But there's such a breadth of different sort of art styles and flavours, and certainly with the rise in popularity of like animation and in like art styles and stuff, and so many more artists are coming up now that are also animators and stuff. You've got some history with animation, have you?
I mean, not professionally, but I would count animation as being one of my, if not my absolute main influence, art style wise. Because I just grew up absolutely obsessed with cartoons, and I've never really lost that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people actually look at my drawings and say, you know, that looks cartoony, or I can recognise the style of the influence of so and so cartoon in it, and yeah, they're probably right.
Should we do the influence thing then? That's a good point to ask you about it. What sort of stuff is your influence? What sort of styles? What sort of cartoons?
I mean, fundamentally, funny cartoons and funny comics. So, I don't know if you guys remember. I'm sure you do. Oink comic from the mid 80s.
Yeah.
I was massively influenced by that. And around a similar sort of time, when I was kind of at 10, 11, 12-ish, I was watching a lot of Cosgrove Hall cartoons on children's ITV as well. Yeah, you know, Danger Mouse, Duck Killer, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I just really like that kind of low... how would you describe it? Kind of not overly detailed visually, but kind of very, very smart with the writing.
Yeah, it's got that sort of madcap feel, but there is, you know, there is something that I think adults will can get a kick out of it. And I think some of the best animations are the ones that you know, because you got to think about it like this. The kids love watching the cartoons, but the parents are usually in the room, or you know,
so watching the same stuff.
Yeah, they're probably watching the same thing. So if you can win over both audiences, it is a special kind of magic, really, isn't it? And that's why things like Danger Mouse was just an absolute. Have they tried redoing Danger Mouse?
Yeah, they've done it. That character from Pointless is on it.
It's
He's the
good.
Voice of it, isn't he?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's good. Oh. They've got the same thing going on when you got like the stuff for adults and the stuff for the kids.
That was at the time where David Jason voiced everything. You had like that Count Duckula. Obviously, he was Mr. Toad in the classic Wind in the Willows. Oh yes, I remember that. Let's see. I'm showing my age now.
I remember that's the thing. Having had kids, Dan, is we're forced to watch cartoons. Yeah. If there was a certain episode of what's that Pokemon cartoon that I used to have to watch with my son, and he used to scream the house down. Yeah, he used to scream the house down if we didn't watch it, and then he would get all excited and tell me about how they're helping each other, and I hate that cartoon. I'll tell him that now. I say, you made me watch that. He's in his 20s now, Laura, so it's fine. But yeah, I say, you made me watch that cartoon. I hate you.
Well, sometimes, yeah, I have to do the thing where, like, I have to pretend to be interested, and, like, because of the lockdown, I'm getting it, like, 24 from dusk till dawn. So, sometimes the mask slips. All right.
Have you seen this one called Fire and Ice, son? Yeah, it's like...
But you did watch that She-Ra through. You really enjoyed that. So I was like, okay,
that's
fair enough.
Yeah, that's a good cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew She-Ra was good.
Yeah.
But Oink was quite, as a youngster, I haven't read it in years, I thought it was quite subversive.
Yeah, it's quite anti-establishment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, they used to call it Viz for Kids, which is, you know, kind of lazy, really, because it wasn't trying to be anything of the sort. But they very much were into the idea of taking the mickey out of anything they wanted to, including the Beano at times. So, you know, I can't officially endorse taking the mickey out of the Beano, but I did enjoy it.
I notice it says on your Wikipedia page that you work for Viz. Was that Viz the comic or was that Viz Media?
No, that was Viz the comic.
I've only had one
thing printed in there, but I can officially say that I'm a Viz artist.
Oh, we're big fans of Viz here.
I think I was the first woman to work for them as well, to draw for them.
Nice
work.
Because you're also, I'm right in thinking you're also the first, on your Wikipedia page, I think it says you're the first woman who worked for the Beano as well. Is that right? Or drew for the Beano?
Yeah, well, drawn for the Beano, yes. So,
wow, brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a few years past without having a female employed, isn't it?
Yeah, Jesus.
When did it start, like 1938 or something? It was
that's
a hell of a history. Yeah.
But it's okay. There's four of us now, so you know it's balancing out.
Oh,
kind of.
Because Viz often takes the mick out of the Beano. You know, well, not specifically the Beano, but
Viz takes the mick out of anything, though. Yeah, they, really.
But the Three Bears, I think they got in trouble for doing that. The mick take of that. So, yeah, are they okay? Are they okay with you doing work for Viz? Or just not brought up or ever mentioned?
Oh, I mean, it never gets mentioned. I mean, you know, I think they understand that all their writers and artists are freelancers and they have to go off and do work for other people. I think if I'd actually done a Beano parody for Viz, that would have been a different matter. But, you know,
I think I've seen
I'm not going there.
I think I've seen Lou Stringer do some work for Viz. I was like, that's bloody Lou Stringer. I could be wrong. Yeah. I'm sure I've seen his work in Viz relatively recently. I guess if it's a paying job, he'd gonna take it.
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, you've always got to have your mind of where you want your career to go as well, don't you? You know, even if something seems like it might be a laugh at the time, if you want to work for some of these companies and it doesn't put you in a good light with them, you've got to be savvy about your career. I know it sounds crazy saying, you know, a comics career, but we're actually talking to someone that does have a comics career.
Yay, finally. We got one. The Beano is such an establishment, though, isn't it? It's such an established comic. Well, did you have any favourite strips, or maybe ones you haven't drawn yet? Is there anything that you'd really like to have, even from the past or something like that, you'd like to have got your teeth into?
Oh, gosh. You know, Mini would have been at the top of the list, but I am drawing her now, so that's okay.
Nice.
I enjoyed the stretch I did on number 13 a couple of years ago. I did some annual pages for them because I love spooky stuff, so anytime I get to draw any of that, that's brilliant. To be totally honest, I'd like to, if I ever got the chance, which is unlikely, but never mind, go back to drawing the strip I was doing a few years ago called Meebo and Zuki, which was basically a dog and a cat pounding the crap out of each other every week. And it was so much fun to draw because it was basically like a less bloody version of drawing Itchy and Scratchy. So you could have skipping ropes and sticking the dog in a blender or stuff like that. That was very enjoyable.
So was it therapeutic? Did you really tap into the dark side of you that you weren't able to get to?
Just think of what you want to do to your partner and put it on the comic page. Fine.
Well, I mean, I've got to be honest. I've never wanted to, you know, garrot my husband or my cat with.
Come on, Lord, you can tell us. We know. We know the truth. Come on.
But it taps in again to the, you know, watching cartoons growing up, because we all grew up with Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
And I think we've all enjoyed watching that kind of fantasy violence. So it's a fun thing to draw because you can really push the facial expressions and the body in a way that you can't really do with the normal human Beano characters.
I don't think it. There's no. I mean, we all read it, and we're not super violent, are we? Well, I don't know about you, Laura, but we're not. Occasionally I draw a fake tunnel on a wall to try and get Wile E. Coyote to run into it, but it never seems to work. You know.
Have you, in your time at the Beano, have you seen a shift in the way they handle the material? As in, when I used to read it, it used to be about you got to do something, otherwise you're going to get slippered by your dad. And I presume that isn't in the Beano nowadays.
No sort of parental maimings anymore, are they? Yeah, it's a real shame.
Like brutal bullying of Cedric by Dennis. I presume that's
they've moved with the times. I mean, they do move with the times, and that's been especially noticeable in the last 10 or 15 years, I think. I mean, the slippering, that went goodness knows how long ago, way before I joined it. So.
Okay.
Long, long time ago, but you still got to show the kids getting punished if they do something particularly heinous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But these days, it's more likely to be something like
would you take their phones off them? Almost. You'll never amount to anything. You don't do that, though. That's not fair.
No, we don't do psychological bullying at the Beano.
Just in the offices, just at DC Thompson.
Yeah. It's strange because, like, obviously, like the kid demographic, like I presume, like when the Beano come out, kids were more likely to be out on their bikes playing around and all that, but. I guess it has changed a little. What?
Yeah.
Well, the internet changed everything massively.
Few months.
Yeah, definitely in the last
few
months.
Yeah, God, yeah.
Taking playing Fortnite or whatever it is.
Yeah. But I mean, speaking of the here and now, with the quarantine, lockdown, and stuff, and obviously there's lots of people who are on furlough or whatever, but the people who make comics are still making comics and like. You know, publications like the Beano have to still come out in any shape or form. And you're as busy as ever, aren't you, Laura?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's been a little bit quieter than the last few years because since 2015, I've been, as you mentioned at the top, working on regular show comic for Boom. I did a couple of graphic novels for them as well as the monthly comics. And last year I was working on a Beano-related book called Where's Nasher, which is kind of...
Where's Wally, is
basically
it?
Basically a Where's Wally cool. sort of book. So that was very intensive. So last year was crazy busy, whereas this year I've pretty much just been working on Beano stuff, which is that perfect balance of keeping me occupied for nearly all of the time, but not... leading to things like all-nighters. You can do without, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a funny one, you know, the Beano. We get everyone, because often a question we ask on this is, what was your first comic? And it's so commonly said, oh, it was the Beano or the Dandy, you know. Kids, you know, people of all ages say that. And it's such an established one. I was looking through the list of stories in the Beano, and I remembered Billy Whiz. Is that still going, that one?
Oh, I think he's become one of those characters that's in sometimes and then out for a while and then back in again. He's certainly not in every week at the moment.
Okay, because for such an establishment, Billy Whiz, I'm told, I don't know if this is true, it's just a rumour I've heard, that that's now like slang for buying amphetamines on the street.
I mean, we've never directly addressed that in the Beano.
I think you need to... I think you need to bring that up in the next board meeting.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh my God. I mean, we're turning the Beano from a friendly kids weekly comic into let's just really get into these
spreading its
issues.
Talons out through society like some kind of drug dealing underground society. Yeah.
God. But yeah, I mean that's obviously great that after 13 years you're still having as much fun doing the Beano as you ever did. That's, you know, how many people can say that about their normal job, never mind about making comics?
True.
Because, I mean, how did you get into making comics full-time anyway?
Well, I mean, I've always liked drawing. I've always loved drawing since I was really, really small. But I never really imagined that I could make a career out of it. I mean, when I was a teenager, I went through a phase of, I taught myself animation, kind of going back to that.
Yeah.
And I made some hand-drawn animations at home with an old Super 8 camera. You remember those?
Yeah.
I kind of just did it as a hobby, really. And I thought I was going to go to uni and learn how to be an animator. But I bottled out of it because I convinced myself that I just wasn't good enough at drawing to do something like that. So I went off, got an English degree, worked as an editor in children's publishing for 8 years, and just drew in my spare time. And then I was kind of, you know, approaching my late 20s and thinking, oh, I really would still like to see if I could actually do something artistic for a living. I don't know how to go about doing that. And by absolutely sheer blind good fortune, at around that time, I found out there was a course running in Birmingham called Strip Search, which was designed to help people break into the comics industry.
Oh, wow.
This was exactly the thing I needed at exactly the time I needed it, amazingly. So I got a place on that. And the encouragement of the tutors, the positive reaction to my drawing, basically gave me that confidence boost that I needed to think maybe I can try and make a go of this.
Mm.
And one of the tutors was Hunt Emerson.
Oh, nice.
I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah,
works at the Beano as well. And I was the only person on the course who was actually drawing funny style comics. Everybody else kind of wanted to go down the kind of 2000 AD Marvel kind of route.
So
I think Hunt kind of wanted to try and give me a helping hand because I worked in the sort of field of comics that he did. So I started helping him out on the Beano strip he was doing at the time called Rats. That kind of got my work under the editor's nose. So off the back of that, he decided to... He saw some of my own comic strips as well that I'd been drawing outside of that, just, you know, for a laugh. He said, right, well, we'll try you out with a strip, see how you get on. And I've been working for them ever since. And almost all the other work that I've had since then has kind of come from the fact that someone has seen that I've worked from the Beano and gone, oh, you're a Beano artist. Have a go at drawing this? Okay. So, yeah, the working for the Beano has been...
A good calling card.
Yeah.
I mean, Boom, though. I mean, had Boom heard of the Beano? Is the Beano something that you find is heard of in America, for example?
Absolutely not. The only people outside of who know the Beano are expats, generally.
Okay.
I started working for Boom, just basically via their conventional submission scheme,
right,
which is essentially you upload some artwork to their Facebook page with a covering letter, and if they like it, they'll get in touch with you. I mean, I didn't have high hopes at the time because I thought, no, I bet they just do this to stop people hassling them with emails. But actually,
actually,
they did get back to me and said, this looks good. We're about to launch a Uncle Grandpa comic, because that had just started on Cartoon Network at the time.
Yeah.
Would you like to pitch us a couple of 2-page stories to go in it? I did a bit of Uncle Grandpa at first. And then the regular show stuff came from there. Because that was another case of a very, very fortunate timing. Because I wanted to pitch them a short story for a regular show comic, because I was a massive fan of regular show at the time.
Were you drawing it a lot and getting used to that stuff? Because I always wonder about this, like when these artists that have very distinctive styles of their own, and they take up like an animation, sort of like, you know, a comic book series based off an animation. And you have to get that right. You have to get that to look like the cartoon it's based on, especially something like Regular Show, which has such a visual style to it. Was it a style that you'd already practiced drawing them in your own time, that kind of thing?
Well, I think one of the things that's helped me out with getting comic work over the years is the fact that I don't have a strong personal style myself, or I don't think I do. But I'm pretty good at absorbing and recreating other people's styles. So I could replicate the regular style, regular show style fairly well. But in that case, it wouldn't even have really been an issue, because Boom were very, very open to people interpreting the properties they had comics of in their own style. So if you go through some of the back issues of the regular show comic, there's an enormous range of art styles in there. So they're very, very flexible. Whereas other people, their properties, they're really, really strict about it. Mm. So, for example, I heard that this is only secondhand, but I heard that the BBC are very, very strict about when people draw Wallace and Gromit, for example.
Right.
It's got to bang on the style. There's no room for individual interpretation. So it does vary from company to company.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, that's a skill for any artist out there who wants to try their hand at doing these things, because these sort of comics are hugely popular. You know these tie-ins, and and also kids are immediately just switched into that as well, aren't they? If they love the series, they're going to buy the comic. It's as simple as that. But like I say, some companies are going to be like, this is our brand, you have to draw it like this. So it's not, you got to think about it like this, it's not fan art, it's a job. It's a proper role. Because when we do fan art, and we've all done fan art, we put our own spins on of like different characters and stuff. But when you're doing these sort of licensed, or I mean, whether it's an animation or whether it's something from the Beano that's got like a 50-year history, you've got to, you are working with, even if they're fairly loose, there's guidelines to what you can and can't do. I mean, certainly, like, how did you find stepping into back to the Beano, that sort of area? And was there a sort of, I mean, obviously there's quite a bit of freedom, and I take it the more confident they were with you as you started working, the more freedom you had. But was there a certain, you can do this, you can't do this? Were there sort of guidelines given to you, or were they like, just go for it?
It was quite helpful that the first couple of Beano strips I worked on, which was Johnny Bean from Happy Bunny Green, and
I love the name.
That's what I call Vince.
What was the second one? It was probably Beano Manga, actually. Johnny Bean was a new strip, so I designed it from the ground up, so there was no kind of style to try and replicate there. But Beano Manga was that came about as a result of the editor seeing my Gilbert and Sullivan strips. Which it basically is drawn in a kind of chibi manga style. And it's just kind of nonsense adventures, the way that chibi manga and super deformed anime would always do. And he said, what about if you try drawing the Beano characters in that kind of, that big-eyed, small-bodied style, and they had some kind of wacky adventures that they wouldn't be able to have in the normal strips. So that was a case of trying out a new style, both visually and kind of storytelling wise. But it becomes a little bit more tricky when you're assigned a character that is pre-existing. So for Minnie, for example, everybody knows what Minnie the Minx looks like.
Is that why you dress like her as well at conventions?
Like a fumetti. Yeah.
Well, if you've got a beret with a pom pom on it, you don't want to waste it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm exactly the same.
But yeah, I'll be perfectly honest. When I started working on Minnie, it was tricky to actually draw her. Because this is technically the second time I've drawn Minnie. I had a run on her for about a year in about 2014. I might be misremembering. No, it was around then. But at that time, I was trying to copy the style of Ken Harrison, who'd been drawing her before. And looking back on it, that wasn't really a great success, because his style is just not like mine. And I know I said before that I'm generally okay with replicating other people's styles, but he hasn't got such a humour style. His drawings are more realistic. He's more more in the style of kind of Dudley D. Watkins, the original Desperate Dan artist, if you can picture that sort of art style.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And that doesn't fit so well with what I do. But this time round, I've gone more towards Nigel Parkinson, who is the current Dennis artist, and
we met him at Nottingham, actually. Yeah, he's a really funny guy, isn't he? We met him at Nottingham. I did a panel with him. Yeah, really good company. Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
So, it's closer to his sort of style. Because the mini artist who was working on her when I was growing up on the Beano in the 80s was Jim Petrie. You know his style if you saw it. He's the guy that always had like the multiple tongues coming out if someone saw some delicious food.
Oh, yeah.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
I love all that sort of thing. People like Ken Reed and stuff.
So I wouldn't try and imitate his look, but there's one or two things from his style that I've tried to slide in there. Like when someone in his art is looking surprised, their pupils are always kind of slightly outside the border of their eyeball. So it looks kind of like they have a little black bead sticking out from their eye.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
I get that in my surprised faces as a nod to Jim.
There's such a language to it, isn't it? Even just Beano and Dandy and, you know, these sort of comics, Wizard and Chips and stuff. There's a real language to it. In the same way that manga's got a language, I suppose, Laura, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I read quite a lot of manga when I was in my 20s, and that really started me off on the Gilbert and Sullivan comics, as I mentioned before.
Yeah, how is that? Because that's your own creation, Gilbert and Sullivan, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, how did that come about? Because obviously you did this, I know it was published in 2015, like there was was it a collection in 2015 that came out? But were you doing this?
Yeah, from Storing Penguin.
Yeah. But were you doing this before the Beano, or was it like after a while of like working with the Beano and some other clients and stuff, you thought, I want to create something of my own? Was it that kind of thing?
It's a bit of a weird one, actually, because I drew the first one probably in about year 2000, 2001, but it just started as something I drew for a laugh inside a birthday card for my husband, because he's a big Gilbert and Sullivan fan, and we were both fans of the anime series DigiCarrot at the time. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
DigiCarrot?
Insane Adventures of a Little Cat Girl.
No, I haven't seen that one.
It's worth checking out. It's definitely worth checking out. It's really demented. So I just kind of came up with this very short, nonsensical strip about a DigiCarrot story, but if Gilbert and Sullivan were acting it out. And he thought it was hilarious. So I'm like, oh, okay, he enjoys that. I'll do another one. And I just kept drawing them. And I did it with kind of very little forethought at all. I would literally sometimes just pick up a piece of paper and just start drawing in the top left-hand corner and then just fill the page with whatever nonsense came out of my head. And it was really good fun. So I had things like Isambard Kingdom Brunel trying on some fake legs that had grown out of mutated Victor Hugo stuffing the Moulin Rouge up his backside.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I made extensive use of Victorian celebrities because they had a lot of good characters back then.
I mean, that's what we need more of in comics, isn't it? Extensive use of Victorian celebrities
and bums.
Yeah.
But then I guess you just kept making them and kept making. I mean, this is the classic comic story, isn't it? Like you do something, like you scribble something on a piece of paper, and before you know it, you know, you've got a collection at the end of the day that got published. I mean, what did you think? I mean, I guess their story is done now. You know, are you going to go back to them in the future, do you think, at some point? Do you still draw them occasionally?
Oh, God, I really would like to return to GMS, because in the original runs of them that I did, there were at least 50 or so different strips. Hmm. I mean, less than half of what ended up in the book. Yeah. But the thing is, I drew them so roughly and so kind of scrappily that for the book, I pretty much redrew all of them so that they actually looked like something that hadn't been drawn on the back of a serviette. Because I thought that was quite important if they were going to get published. so, yeah, I mean, I would like to redraw some of the old strips, because I'm sure I've probably got enough for a second book. Oh, and wow. I would definitely like to come up with more stories. I always had one planned where they were going to dissolve their partnership and partner up with other people. And the other people were going to be Thomas Crapper, the inventor of the flush toilet, and Basil Jett, the designer of the sewer system. So it was going to be a big kind of toilet sewer battle.
Ah, shit detectives.
And I still feel like the world needs to see that.
I think I need to see that.
I think, yeah. I think, yes, we need to see this in the next couple of years.
Laura, the other thing I read it on the Lambeck Comic Clopedia, which is like a...
Hello.
Yeah, I read about you on there. And it said that you worked as an editor in children's books before you started drawing them. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So well, what sort of stuff?
For Usborne Books, and my name comes up. That's me.
Okay. Did you find that affected the way you drew comics or the way you approached publishing at all, or after that?
Oh, that's a really good question, actually.
And you'd get one in eventually.
We were bound to get one. Episodes, we were bound to get one, weren't we? Finally.
Sorry, I interrupted you, Laura. Sorry, mate. Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
I think if anything, it's made me just more thorough.
Good.
Because yeah. I was working under a head editor, so everything I wrote would go through her, and everything she fed back to me would also go through another head editor. Lots of rounds of kind of feedback and fine-tuning and tweaking and stuff.
Right.
And obviously, if you're working on your own, as I am pretty much all the time, you've got to be in charge of all that yourself. So I think it's helped me to have an eye for that sort of thing. Not just being anal about spelling and grammar and stuff when I'm doing lettering, which I absolutely am. But even in the art as well, just kind of scanning it maybe that little bit more thoroughly.
Blimey. Okay. So an eye to detail, you think, maybe a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent way of summarising what I've just blathered about. Learning to be succinct is also a good skill you get from editing, but I haven't quite perfected it yet.
What is the convention sort of scene and circuit like for you? Because obviously, as you said at the start, you know, saw you at True Believers, and obviously you were doing some workshops and stuff, which we'll get onto workshops in just a second. But obviously you had your own table, and like you had Gilbert and Sullivan, which is readily available from you if people want to get a copy of it. You still got copies left?
I do have a few copies. So if anybody wants to get in touch with me about that, that's fine. You can also buy it from any high street book retailer or online ones.
Get it straight from Laura. Get it straight from
Laura.
Yeah, get it from me. Yeah, that's what I did at True Believers, and it's great. But obviously, you know, when you're an artist working for a publisher and like you're at these shows, what kind of table setup do you go for? You know, what do you have? You know, do you have a couple of issues of Beano? You know, you've obviously got bits of your own artwork and stuff. How do you find that, the convention side of comics?
Yeah, conventions can be a bit of a tricky one, actually, because, yeah, it's been helpful in the last couple of years to have the regular show material, because I do sell the trade paperbacks of the graphic novels I've worked on and the compiled individual issues I've worked on, because obviously they brought them out as trades afterwards.
Yeah.
I've got copies of Where's Nasher now as well, so I've got a nice little book area. But also, I do sketches on demand, portraits on demand. I've got some fan art type prints. But I mean, obviously, that's a bit of a grey area. Some conventions, fan art prints are okay, some not so okay. Yeah, so you need to be careful with that one.
If you want a good What We Do in the Shadows print, you go to Laura, trust me.
Brilliant.
So it must be strange then, I guess. But it's like you say, it's good to have that sort of extra bit of stock. But sometimes it shows. Do you find that how many shows do you normally do workshops at?
Not the majority. Let me think. I did a workshop at True Believers this year.
Yeah.
the only show I did this year and will do this year.
Said everyone.
Yeah.
Probably,
yeah.
Probably two or three in a year. But I mean, normally the workshops I do are separate from comic conventions. They're usually for libraries or less frequently schools.
Yeah, so, you know, you've actually got a section on your website about this as well. So obviously, you know, we've talked about workshops, you know, a few times on this show, and you know how they're great for kids and stuff. You're clearly quite passionate about them, and obviously make yourself available for, like you say, libraries and workshops and stuff. What got you started to do that, and how important do you think workshops are?
Oh, massively important. 'Cause you do find, unfortunately, that there are adults around that think that comics aren't relevant to kids anymore. But if you actually interact with the kids, they're always into it. They always have enthusiasm for drawing and for creating new characters and just making up stories. And if you put comics in front of them, they will always read them. They will always enjoy them. It's just a matter of creating that connection between the, you know, the potential audience and what it's possible for them to read and what it's possible for them to do.
And like you say, they have enthusiasm, and you never know. These people that do a workshop now, you know, a few years down the line, they'll be working for whatever publisher and stuff. If we don't get kids into comics, you know, what is the future going to be, people? You know, so, and it says, like, you did, was it 2018? You did like over 30 workshops in libraries. Is that right?
Yeah, that was an extremely busy summer for me, because that was over the course of 2 months.
Yeah.
Because pretty much every year I do the Summer Reading Challenge, which is actually how I got started in workshops. I think it was about 2008, a library contacted me and said, oh, can you do us a workshop on our reading challenge theme this year, which I think was heroes and villains. And I got to admit, I was terrible at my first workshop. Because I was really nervous, and I think I had my editor head on a bit too much, because I planned it kind of like an essay about like what makes a hero and what makes a villain, with like bullet points and stuff. a real kind
kids
of
love a PowerPoint, Laura.
Way too dry. Way too dry. I should have just busted out some drawings of Batman and the Joker. But you know, you learn quickly when you've got a room full of bored looking kids in front of you that you need to up your game. So they have improved since then.
So I'm guessing kids just want to get stuck in and start like creating sooner rather than later, rather than, you know, you're not going to do a 15-minute introduction to comics, are you?
No, you don't want to be talking too much at the start. So I have learned over time that the best way you can start a workshop is just by drawing something really fast for them. So if I can stand in front of a flip chart and draw Minnie the Minx or Mordecai from Regular Show in about 10 or 15 seconds, you immediately have the kids' attention because they're like, oh, how can you do that so fast? I want to learn to do that. So, then you can talk to them for a little bit and then straight in with the drawing for them.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And this goes for conventions as well, because conventions, obviously, especially the Indian conventions, they like to put on like workshops and stuff. But you can't just sort of say, oh, we're going to just have some workshops and we'll just ask some people to do it. Because there is, you like you say, you do have to. I would not know where to start with a workshop. It would be absolute carnage if I attempted something like that. I think. Well, yeah, it would be.
I reckon you'd do all right, Pete.
Well, you know, I'll just tear up their paper and go, do it again.
Yeah. It's been really horrible to kids. That's what the Beano has taught me.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to stay with a slipper and a
PowerPoint. That and how to buy amphetamines. Yeah. They're the two lessons. Roger the Dodger was always a favourite of mine, Laura. Always enjoyed
Roger the Dodger. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the numbskulls. I like the numbskulls as well.
When I was younger, but I've come to appreciate the character more as the years have gone on, because they're leaning very heavily these days into the kind of absurdity of the amount of effort he puts into not making any effort.
Yeah,
I mean, he's both the smartest character in the Beano and the biggest idiot.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Used his time a bit more constructively.
Exactly.
Talking about these characters, I always jump to the Viz versions of them. I don't know. They did one called Roger the Lodger. Oh. And it starts somebody, he sort of sees a sign outside a house that says, like, room £50 a week. And he goes, oh, his room's elevated. We give him £50. And then he ends up on the bed. He goes, great lodge, eh, readers? And the other one was, there was a character, I'm not sure if he's in the Dandy or Beano, Faceache.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was it Ken Reed who drew that, was it? I can't remember now.
That's right.
Yeah. That's great stuff. They just released some of that again, haven't they? They've put some hardbacks out. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
What was the premise of that? He could change his face into anything. Was that right? He could, like,
an
animal.
So many.
So I can't remember.
He was supposed to be just very good at pulling faces. But,
that's right.
I mean, it was kind of next level face pulling, because he could literally kind of turn his whole body into a monster. So yeah,
that's pretty up there. Yeah. Skill wise.
Yeah. Oh, my wife can do that.
Yeah.
Turn into a monster.
Yeah. Jim Carrey's made a career out of it.
Yeah, he has.
Just don't load the dishwasher correctly, and you get to see it.
Oh dear. So what's in the future for the, well, obviously you can't give away the Beano secrets, and I'm
sure,
don't
that, give away any plot points.
I'm sure there's someone
massive
listening.
Crossovers with the Avengers coming up, yeah, so just be careful.
And there's probably a sniper trained on you as we speak.
They do commando as well. You've got to be careful of them. The commando office, they're ready to go at any time. Come the revolution. They just pull their rifles out and they're off.
Yeah. I was pleased to hear that through the lockdown, the Beano has been coming out. It's not stopped. Yeah. That's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah, I mean they've been kind of dealing with the lockdown in a really good way, in my opinion, because the decision was made early on that the characters wouldn't also be trapped in their houses. Because that probably would have been quite depressing.
Jeez, yeah.
But instead, they've kind of they've increased the activity levels in the comics. So there's more puzzles. Things to do in the comics. So buying some more precious moments of attention for kids trapped in the house.
Yeah, that's really
good thinking. Yeah,
that's good thinking, isn't it? Really. Yeah. And one of the important things about the Beano as well, I mean, we always talk about the difficulty of getting comics to kids, and these are comics that aren't in a plastic bag with a toy that's essentially just a magazine jumped up as a, you know, with a, probably a 2-page comic in it somewhere. The Beano's a genuine sort of regular comic that's coming out, and it's also in, like, you know, the co-op. It's on sort of, well, newsstands. Do we call them new? We don't call them newsstands over here, do we? But it's still readily available, isn't it?
Double H Smiths and stuff like that. Stock it. I think that's right, Laura, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's you can get it in pretty much any supermarket, but
that's good.
They've also been doing a lot of subscription offers throughout lockdown too. So I think you can get something like 6 free issues for signing up at the moment.
Yes,
I should have done. I should have swatted up on this beforehand, but there are
Well, Laura,
out there,
it's so funny you should say this out, actually, because I've got the web page here right in front of me. they do a subscription, and we've talked about the value of subscription, especially for these sort of comics as well. I mean, with the Phoenix, it is a similar sort of thing. Great value, and, like, you know, just having that regular book getting delivered to your house is brilliant. Yeah, I think for 6 months. It's about £47.49 with a bit of, you save £21, so that's £1.90 per issue.
That's good.
And 12 months is £87, you save £50, and that's £1.74 per issue. And there's also a direct debit option. That's how legit they are, people. And if you do the direct debit, it's only £1.50 per issue. Get on it. 13 issues for only £18.75. Woo! And you get a prank kit. Bloody hell.
That's awesome.
Yeah, even I haven't got a prank kit.
Yeah, well, that's what this show is.
Yeah. Cell phone across the toilet. That's what we are.
Oh,
the,
God.
The audio.
But it is, I mean, looking at the website as well, you know, there's a lot to be said about branding with children's comics as well. And I know they've had a bit of an overhaul. Like, when you see the Beano now, you've got this yellow band at the top, and the name is front and centre, which is brilliant. And, yeah, it's just a really just well-designed looking comic. Never mind the fun that goes on in between. You have to, if you're going to make a kids' comic and it's going to be on these shelves, parents need to know where to look, and they've got to be able to find it. And thankfully, the Beano isn't a very long name, so you can have it very big on your cover. what is in the future sort of for the Beano, as well as subscription stuff? How far ahead do you work?
On average, I think it's probably about 6 weeks between what I'm drawing and seeing it on the shelves.
Not
so
long,
quite
is it?
Quite far ahead. But I mean, that's only for the weekly comic. I mean, you'd be amazed how far ahead they work on annual stuff. So I've already done 6 pages in total for the 2022 Beano and Dandy annuals.
2022.
Yeah, so they'll be out next.
The
August.
World might have ended by then, Laura.
Yeah, but I'll still have been paid for it.
Very true. Good point. Bring it on.
Underneath all the fun and the jokes and the pranks, there's a businesswoman there.
You got a mortgage to pay. Good stuff.
Oh dear. No, but I mean, obviously, this is we've done like quite a few episodes of this, and it's been long overdue to talk.
Well, how many times have we mentioned the Beano? It's over 100 each.
Yeah. Loads,
yeah.
Often it's the first people would comic people say that's the first comic they ever read.
Yeah, picked up. Isn't it?
Certainly was for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and now you're living the dream of working on it.
So. I know, and I honestly do consider myself extremely privileged because it's the Beano.
Yeah.
I mean, what more do you need to say?
Yeah.
And be, as you mentioned at the start, it is incredibly rare in comics to actually have work that is consistent, not just from week to week, but month to month, and if you're lucky, year to year.
And it's also the one, if you've got friends, you know, we've all got friends, and we say, and who don't understand our world, Laura, you know, and they say, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, I write comics. And they go, well, like the Beano. You can actually say yes.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I mean, it is rare, but I think it speaks even louder about your work ethic and the work that you're putting out. So, which is awesome stuff. So you need to check out. Where can people find out? Because obviously on your website you've got lots of stuff about workshops, etc. I know there's no workshops happening at the moment, but in the future, people, or you might be listening to this.
Say I've done a few of them on Zoom since lockdown.
Oh, really?
How's
that?
Again, was a learning experience, but it was fine. It was good.
Oh, is that something you've still got available, or are you too busy at the moment?
Well, that was for a specific local company, so that wasn't off my own bat.
Mm.
But now that I know it's a possibility, I actually would like to get some Zoom sessions going. We're entering into the 6 weeks holiday now. Not that it's going to be that much different from the last few months. It'd be nice to have something that the kids can entertain themselves with during that time. So if I manage to get some of those together, they'll be mentioned on my website or on my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Victorian Clam across all social media.
Yeah, you got your brand.
You mentioned that last couple of weeks.
That came from the first Gilbert and Sullivan strip, actually, if you were wondering.
Okay.
I was about to ask you, you cut off the question before I asked it. Yeah.
One of the characters answers the door thinking it's the mayor, and the other one responds, "That's not a mayor, it's a Victorian clam." And it's literally a floating clam in a top hat.
And there the brand was born.
Yep. I slightly regret it, but, you know.
Oh, well, we'll start with these things, aren't we?
Yeah. And it's laurahowell.co.uk, which, so I guess you're going to... Do you keep that, the importance of a website, like how often do you sort of update it or, like, keep it regular? Because it seems pretty up to date.
That is a very good observation. I've actually used lockdown to completely rebuild it, which is why it looks fresh at the moment. But prior to 2 months ago, I hadn't updated it since about 2012.
That sounds like an artist. That's completely the artist, yeah. And the amount of times I've heard, I've got a website, but I haven't updated it in about 5 years. That sort of thing. So, yes, you can go see the lovely, fresh, new website. And find out more about these workshops.
I should point out as well, just about the website, there will be a shop coming on there at some point where I'll be selling books and prints and artwork in the absence of being able to do it at comic cons. Again, that'll be something that I probably tweet about when that happens.
Yeah. So, yeah, you should definitely follow Laura on Twitter. And social media. Are you on Instagram as well? Everyone is.
Yep, Victorian Clam yet again.
Yeah. Easy enough to find. Yeah. So stay tuned to when the workshop. I think the workshops are a great idea at the moment. Like you say, with the six weeks holidays, I think that would be very, very popular. And probably something that a lot more people might do in the future.
To do ones for grown-ups as well. Because grown-ups love drawing just as much. It really pleases me when I have a library workshop where the grandkids have brought their grandchildren along, and they're like, "Oh, it's nice to watch them, but we haven't drawn anything for years and years and years. We can't do it." And I shove a clipboard at them and say, "No, you're going to draw something now."
That's a little bit aggressive, aren't we?
Yeah, well, you know, you can't mess around with these things. You've only got an hour to play with. You've got to set out your stall. Everyone in the room's going to draw. That's what's going to happen. And at the end of it, they've drawn something and they're so happy. They just, oh, I didn't know I could do this. Don't know why they're from the West Country now, but it's really heartwarming.
Yes. Well, we've got a community of people that loves to draw, or so they will probably be finding out when these workshops are going to happen. So, yes, thank you very much for joining us this week, Laura. You've been an absolute legend.
Yes. Brilliant. Yeah, long time coming.
Hopefully, we will see you at a convention one day in the future. It will happen. It will happen.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Yeah. Post apocalyptic comic conventions are all the rage in 2025.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be like Mad Max, but with like fan art prints.
Comics.
Well, there you go, folks.
Good.
Another professional spoken to.
Con someone for the Beano to come on. Phew.
Yes.
Moving on up.
Yes. And as you can see, we asked a good question, and
she told us.
Yeah. So it's legit. Like it's canon now.
Once in 5 years.
Yeah.
We're doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but you know, thank you again, Laura, for joining us. It was right.
Thank you, Laura. Cheers.
Yeah. And definitely check out her work. So yeah. I've got the Gilbert and Sullivan book and it's fucking great. So
okay.
But from all of that sort of stuff to the shout outs. Do we have any shout outs this week?
I've got loads. You ready? Hold on to your hat.
Go for it.
Are you is this gonna be like a rat a tat tat?
There's four. First off, big one. Ready for the big one. Okay. Congratulations, Ian and Nikki of the Lakes Pod, our
Yay!
Friends.
Congratulations.
Two of our favourite people in the world. Yeah. There is a rumour going around that Ian's going to have a Space Marines wedding, so I'm game on for that.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've made a fucking ridiculous amount of money, that Warhammer company.
They
outstrip like some of the big companies, you think. Yeah. They're like, I can't remember who it was, but I was like, fucking hell, they made more than them. And I was blown away. But they're doing the same, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've only got three. Next one, thanks to everyone who bought Tony Osmond this week. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Blown away, man. We've almost sold out. I've got two left. Just had another order come in while I've been recording.
The
print
copy came out very nicely, I will say.
It did, man. It did. We had a lovely designer, a very skilled designer, and and a couple of great pinup artists. And Cumber. It's lovely to see Cumber in print, man.
Yeah.
How good is Cliff? He's
fucking great. I loved it. I'd buy that comic for his art all day, every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so good. Also, Kev and Rachel Lee Carter. Kev Cooley and Rachel Lee Carter did pinups. Both brilliant as well. So
and Ken Reynolds,
and you two guys.
Lettering is spot on.
Ken's spot on, man.
Yeah.
He got it right.
He really did, yeah.
Although he might be listening, so we can't be too nice about him.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And the last one is Nottingham are cancelled. Finally cancelled. We've known about it. Don't tell anyone. We've known about it for a bit of time. But 23rd of the 10th, 2021 is Nottingham next year. I've already booked. So brow. And I'm hoping you guys are going to be there as well. So we're already on board. So I'm looking forward to that. I love Nottingham so much. Not only is it a really good family and a social affair, it's also a really good moneymaker for us. We kill at that event.
Yeah. Next
really
year is going to be a big year for conventions for all the people that want to. Yes, and Nottingham's just a great atmosphere.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to kind of get a comic together for conventions next year, now is the best time to start.
Yeah, crack on.
I might actually have some comics next year.
Real?
Yeah, amazing. You got comics now, you silly bastard. You got 666 out, you bastard.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah, which you can find at andyblawcomics.com.
The news MCM October London was cancelled as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was this week
or last
week. But...
It's just sensible. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, sad faces, sad face emoji all around, but everyone understands. And if you don't understand why they're doing it, you're a prick. So that, it's as simple as that. Next year is going to be an absolute fucking storming year for comics. Let's look at it like that, people. Let's not worry about, you know, there are other things to worry about rather than...
Yeah, just shrug shoulders and move on. In the grand scheme of things, it's not.
Yeah. We've still got comics.
Can't wait for the next comic, Mart. I'm desperate for a comic, Mart, man.
Right. So is that your shout-outs, Tony?
That's mine. All done, babes, yeah.
Right, I've got two. Kickstarter, Galaxy Grappling Alliance, issue two. Solar Slam. wrestling and sci-fi collide in a homage to the golden age of wrestling, saving the galaxy one drop kick at a time. And that's Kickstarter run at the moment from Damian Edwardson. We'll put the link in the show notes. Go check that one out. And also, I was contacted over Twitter by Gabby Scanlon. And she went, this is a message. Hello, Dan. Would it be possible to please get a shout on the podcast for BigHypeComics.com? They're putting together a comics collection as established creators alongside newbies, so the fan base of the former can help the latter. Submissions are open until July 31st for a 5-10 page story, pitches any genre to be produced in black and white. And she says how much she loves the show. But I popped on, looked at the site, and some of the comics on there look absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So go check that out. And Big Hype Comics.
We've got an awful lot of people in our community who are really becoming fond of making comics. So now is the time. I've got one shout out. It's for a Kickstarter that is live on the 7th of July. What's that? Is that tomorrow? No, it's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday, yeah.
And it's from
tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow? No.
It's
7th of July 2020. It is the Sagas of the Shield Maiden Kickstarter. This is from Asa Wheatley, and this is a Viking Western. Obviously, he's been looking forward to doing this for a while. I spoke to him at BAM in last December, was it?
Oh, yeah, I spoke to him at BAM. He was almost next door to us, wasn't he?
Yeah. And, it's just like Asa is a super nice bloke. And this, we were talking about, like, doing historical themed sort of books and like mixing those sort of genres and stuff, but this book looks, I mean, I've just seen the cover and I'm sold. So
yeah, it looks great.
Yeah,
I've done remind me on that one.
Yeah, it's I think it's going to be like an anthology sort of book of like this character in these different sort of scenarios, because there's a murderous row of creators he's got lined up for it. So 7th of July, look for that one, because that's gonna be another one that's gonna be doing the rounds, I think. Rightfully.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, can I do another Kickstarter?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
So it's I can't find it now.
That's a good thing.
Holly, a graphic novel by Stephen Ingrams. Comes out. Now, I notice a lot of people now are doing. I think Ace has done the same thing, where you sign up to be notified as soon as it lands.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Stephen did that with this one as well, and I got notified straight away. I think I'm back at number two or something, and so that's currently, it's about halfway, it's got loads of days left. So Stephen is always an interesting and thoughtful creator, and I suggest you get on that one as well. Good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice, there you go. A few Kickstarters and worthy shout outs all, I think. But now let's recommend some comic books. Yes, that's what we're all here for, aren't we? Well,
yep.
No, we're just here, and we have been here for 5 years, but occasionally we recommend comics. So we're going to do that now. Who would like... Tony, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
There's one that me and Tony are going to tag team on.
No.
I'll just leave that there.
Yeah.
But Tony, you want to go first with your one?
I'll do my main one, shall I? Yeah, so Fire, Power, Separate Words, which I actually don't think it's a great name for it.
No.
If you hear Firepower, you hear Robert Kirkman's got a book out called Firepower, you think, oh, it's about a geezer with guns, don't you?
I had to Google that. I couldn't find it in Comixology. I had to go to Google, and it took me longer than it should have done just because of the fucking title.
Yeah.
It's Fire, Space, Power.
Yeah, because that is essentially the power that they have in this, and I'll explain.
Gotcha.
Volume 1, Prelude. So it's like, I think it comes out physical next week, I think. This week, day after tomorrow. It's creator and writer Robert Kirkman, creator and artist Chris Samney. I'm sure, though, look, I know we're an indie show, but this so lit my fuse this morning, I've decided to speak about it. Colours by Matt Wilson, letters by Russ Wooten, editor Sean Makowicz. Now, this is a book that I texted you to at 8 a.m. this morning, didn't I think, roughly?
Yeah. So, it's one that's been on my radar for a while. I didn't realise that this had come out, because it's a martial arts sort of book, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is exactly what it is, and it's Chris Samney.
Yes, I was about to say that name alone was like,
that's enough, isn't it?
Right, yeah,
that's all you need. And to be fair, he's the most MVP. What's the Yanks call it? MVP, most valuable player in this game. Kirkman does what he does, and he does it well in this book. But I think, to me, like, fucking hell, Samney, Jesus Christ, it's so good. It's up there for my book of the year already. I'll be honest with you.
And this isn't even the full series.
No. This is the prelude. So it's a fairly basic story, to be fair, and it hints, but it does, it takes kind of something that we're already used to, which I'll talk about in a minute, but it adds hints of the future and has plot twists and stuff. And at the end, I won't ruin the ending, but it fucking explodes at the end. Absolutely goes for it. And it's, like you say, it's a prelude. It follows that slight cliche of Iron Fist and Doctor Strange, where a man climbing through the mountains, you know, like the Himalayas, the snowy Himalayas, he's about to die, and he sees a butterfly. He sees a sort of golden butterfly, and he follows the butterfly through over a mountain and through the sort of deep snow and through a mist. And then he comes out on the other side in this kind of martial arts monk village. You know, that sort of classic Kunlun kind of thing going on. And it turns out he's a student of martial arts, and he's studied pretty much as far as he goes. And his name's Owen Johnson, and he comes across this master. There's Master Wei Lun. Is the geezer's name, and he's one of these sort of slightly eccentric characters who he carries a staff, and he's really old and skinny, but he also wears like headphones because he's listening to his Walkman, and he always wears sort of trendy trainers. So there's a little bit of that going on in it. He's a very eccentric kind of guy, and he says, "Look, you want to come to this village? You got to fight me." And the kid, who is nowhere his equal, but he fights him, and he accidentally touches it. He actually gets to touch this master on the face. And all the way through it, the master's saying, "Where did you learn that move?" And he said, "I learned, the golden tiger claw move." He says, "I taught that off master such and such." And he said, "I taught him." You know, it's like that all the way through this fight. It's really lovely choreographed. And right at the end, he manages to just touch the master's cheek, or just slide past his cheek. And he says, "Where did you learn that?" And he went, "Well, I learned that by watching you just now. It's just I learn as I go along." And he says, "Right, you're in." And he gets into this village. And he begins to sort of find his place in the town, and his martial arts skills are on the rise. But there is this power, like the title, this fire power. So they use heat as part of their martial arts. Do you see what I mean by that? Yeah. It's sort of weird.
Yeah.
But they also use it as they get given bowls of rice, and they heat up the bowls of rice using this heat power. And there's also something, this power isn't quite in someone's grasp. And there's a couple of mysteries that are going on in the town. There's a statue of an old master. And when he says, "Oh, who is he?" He says, "Oh, he's decided he couldn't obtain this power or something, or he'd gone far enough with his power. So he's frozen himself and he's now a statue." And he says, "What do you mean? What do you expect me to believe that?" And he goes, "Yes." And then he says, "And what's in that room there?" And there's this huge guard, masked guard, standing outside this room. And he says, "Well, there's a dragon in there." And he says, "What, seriously?" And he says, "Yeah." And that becomes a mystery that begins to unfold as well. There's the usual politics in the town, where there's, you know, the other kid, you know, the other trained sort of teenagers or adults who are training don't like him, so he has to prove himself against them. Which is, you know, that you get that in all this sort of thing. We got that in Doctor Strange. We got that in Iron Fist. You know, there's all that sort of thing going on.
Mm.
And there's also a girl. So there's also the love interest thing that begins to take off a little bit, not too much, not too obvious. but Kirkman does what Kirkman does, where Kirkman has adopted something. And I think Miller does this to a certain extent. They adopt something that is probably a known trope, but they add their flourishes to it. So there are moments in it. Like he gives Master Wei Lun, he gives him a Walkman. Not a Walkman, he gives him a... what the digital Walkmans that came out? iPad. He gives him an iPod, and he says, "Look, you move the circle around, and it takes you through different songs." And he goes, "I know what an iPod is, you idiot." He says, "Have Radiohead had anything else out recently?" And it's so he adds these little things, but it's so readable. And along with Samney, who, you know, when you're watching a kung fu movie or you're watching a kung fu fight or just a fight in a comic, there's a drama to a fight, isn't there? It's more than a choreography. You're watching, oh, he's winning. Look at his face. Oh, he's confident. He's not confident. Oh, he's suddenly shocked that this man has managed to do this or this woman's managed to do this. And the drama of the fight is just, Samney is just all over. It's so beautiful. Real motion. And Samney does what Samney does. He does what his work is lacking in noodling, but he does enough to make it, you know, extremely readable. Mm. You know, we've talked about Toth in the past, and that sort of Toth thing. You know, there's enough in there. You just watch the flow.
Yeah, the line is all important. When people don't, and just with a couple of brush strokes, they create a picture. That it's alchemy. You know, people like Chris Samney's, in my opinion, he's been one of the best for years.
Yeah, he has. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you look at sometimes he just does a black and white commission somewhere, and he'll post it on Twitter, and you just start, you realize you've been crying because it's so beautiful.
Beauty of just knowing exactly where to put that mark, you know, just to give it that emphasis. And it's traditional comics. It's it's not overly cartoony, but there's enough of that in it to make it to give it that fluidity. Yeah, just absolutely beautiful stuff. It's a basic story that you that might surprise you at the end. It goes somewhere. I'm not going to spoil it because it's 150 pages. This prelude. I think it's a hardback.
I think for a prelude, I think if you go playing those cliches, that's nice because then the story could completely trip you up. They could take you in.
And the last three pages completely change pace. There's a real change of pace in the last three pages of the story, which I won't ruin. Is it? I know you guys have ordered it. I've ordered it as well, but I ordered it a while ago. Is it a hardback?
Paperback.
It's a paperback.
That's what I ordered.
I thought it was hardback. Yeah, that's my mistake. Okay, but it's worth doing. I know he did this. He's done this with a few other books, hasn't he? Previously, where he's released a prelude before the actual story comes out. But you can pre-order issues 1, 2, and 3. I think on Comixology as well at the moment. Yeah, really good. I mean, it's a no-brainer already. I've been back and read it again. Nice. And I think this is a real winner. Yeah, that's my one. There you go. I'm not going to give any like websites because it's fucking Robert Kirkman. If you can't find a comic by him, cool. Yeah.
I think me and you both pre-ordered it this morning.
He did. Yeah.
The backers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the power of this show. Even the hosts have that power on each other.
Including one that me and Tony read. But
yes.
So I'll do mine first, then you can go down, then me and Tony will take a step. My first one is one that that's the thing about this show. Sometimes I could be talking about a comic that you've already heard about, but someone in the world, someone somewhere hasn't heard about it. I certainly hadn't really heard about it. I probably had my head in the sand at the point where I think there was a Kickstarter and it's been out and it's done the rounds and stuff. But I found it on bhpcomics.com. And it's Chris Baldy's At Roller One, which is a one-shot, one and done. I didn't even really know much about it. I knew Chris's work from Space Captain of Space, which is great in itself. And I love that series. And I thought, oh, what's this? And it's D&D, Friendship and Adventure. And I've fallen in deep with the D&D world. But this one is, Alice is no stranger to being the new teen in town. When she arrives at a new school, the last place she expects to find herself in, is in the middle of a daring quest with a cleric, an orcish bard, and a dwarven warrior. Together, this ragtag band and their crafty games master take on thrills, chills, and spills to delight readers young and old, learning along the way about friendship, teamwork, and belonging. And this book really did put me in a... when I read it, it's not a huge book. Lovely printed. I mean, BHP put out some nice product. But this is, it just puts a smile on your face. Sometimes comics just have to do that. It's a character based story of this girl who obviously she doesn't know anyone, and then there's a group of kids. She basically makes some new friends who are like, do you want to play this game with us? And she doesn't know what it is, but by playing this game they all come together. And it does a great thing of, it's telling the story of them, but then when it cuts to their characters in the game, and Chris has drawn that world as well. So, you know, Alice is like an elven character, so you see her playing at the table, and then it cuts to what her character is doing in the game, even though it's speaking with her voice. And I just blasted through it, absolutely loved it. I think it's $8.99 from BHP Comics. Like I say, I'm probably preaching to the choir for a lot of this one, because when I posted a picture probably a few weeks ago, do you remember on my social media? Read this is great. Yeah. And then I got a chorus of like, yeah, I remember reading that was great. When I pledged the Kickstarter, that was good. And I thought, where the fucking hell have I been? I haven't been in the bunker.
It's been out a while though, isn't it? It has been out a while.
It's been out a little while. I mean, obviously, I think it was a Kickstarter first. This one came 2019. So, yeah. He probably had it at Thought Bubble. But you might not know about it. And if you are a fan of like D&D or just like just comics that just make you smile, definitely get Roller One, because it's great. When it finished, I thought, I'd like to read more stories about this little group of friends. You don't need to. But I think that speaks volumes to a story when you finish it and go, oh, I'd like to see more of that. Because most of the time when we read comics... we don't talk about them on this show, but there's been many times on our WhatsApp when we're like, "Ugh, God, I'm not reading that again." So Roller One, that's my first one. Chris Baldy, at Chris Baldy on Twitter, who you might hear more about in the future.
Yep.
Dan.
We got, I think this book got sent to all three of us, and it's uploaded to Comixology. Yeah. It's Mount Comic Rescue. House. Comic House, not Comixology. No. Yes, you're quite sorry. So Mount Rescue, issue zero, written, edited by Dave Robertson. He's written a lot of the stuff, but there's a whole host of artists that have pitched in and drawn. And some really nice little observations in the comic. It's essentially like one or two pages one-shots with some longer stories in it. There's that one that kind of, there's two, I think one that you gravitated towards, Tony, is the Mr. T one. T minus.
Yeah, there's a great one in the back that's, it's T minus not happening. If only Bier Brackus had not been so terrified of air travel, I ain't flying on no plane fool. He would have followed his fellow A-team members into outer space. Lieutenant aboard the Battlestar Galactica, a space trucking cowboy battling the evil forces of Seder, and a lieutenant aboard the Starship Enterprise. But no, his fear of flying led into a misguided career as a boxer, which is like great, great page strip. Like genius, yeah.
And there's one where it's Star Wars, and it's Luke being told by Yoda, you're not ready to face Vader, you haven't finished your training. And then later on, obviously, he comes back and he goes, I need to finish my training. And then Yoda's like, oh, you know everything you need to know. And like, there's a pause, and Luke, he's like, I can't remember this guy.
I think I haven't found the page, but it's a Mike Sadaka in this as well. I've got a feeling, didn't he tell us, Dave, tell us that Mike's in it as well?
Okay.
I think he is.
That's a check.
Yeah.
I have to ask David about the, there's a page of like, obviously a take on the atheist experience with Matt and Tracy talking to the camera. And I don't know where it's going, that one.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there's moments of surrealism. There's, you know, it's like a sort of sketch show. That's why I love Dave's work anyway, because it's like this collection of different types of stories. He's just making the comics he wants to make and then puts them in a collection.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
and they're lovely little books as well. They've got that perfect binding on them, haven't they, as well?
I like that. Yeah.
And if you really want, like, a splash page of Magnum P.I. in his fucking...
his pants.
In his pants, then this book gives it to you.
Yeah, we all want that.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah,
we do. Really nice, amusing. It's got that the one page from the awesome comic as well, the special.
Yes,
that,
that
talking about our time of collecting shit comics for the competition. But yeah, it's a lovely comic, and you can read it. You can either buy a copy straight from David or check it out on Comic House, which has just been uploaded to the app.
Good stuff.
Yes. And one more we've just decided to sort of tack on at the end, because I took a moment out to sort of kick back and just catch up on some digital comics reading. I had a few sort of piled up over the past few weeks. Also, I've got a lot of covers that I've saved up over the past few weeks that I was gonna post, because I haven't done the cover thing for a couple.
I know,
weeks.
We haven't done it. I've not been feeling it for a few weeks, and I fell off it a bit.
I have saved some up, and I've been looking at them thinking, I might just do a thread of like the cool covers over the past few weeks. One of the books I bought I read a few, and it was a great moment where I was enjoying all of them. But I read a little book about some barbarian fellow I hadn't really heard of before. Who is this? Conane? How do you say it?
Do they say his name in it? They do say the interiors, don't they? But they don't say it on the cover, do they? Because I don't think they got the license.
This is a Blaze have published this, and this is the Sumerian issue one of Red Nails. As it says, this is based on Red Nails is one of Conan's most beloved and sophisticated stories. Now, when I come to Conan stories, I haven't read any of the Robert E. Howard sort of stories. I haven't read any of them.
I've got a feeling this is the last one. Yeah, I think this might be the last one he wrote, actually.
So whenever I go into Conan's story, it's a fresh experience. And it says a lot about the character that I know where I am with Conan with every single story. But this one itself is by Regis Hortier, Olivier Vatine, and Cassegrain.
Yeah, so it doesn't say what the artists do on that. There's two artists, but it doesn't make it clear what either of them does, is it?
And on the Comixology bit, it says that they give substance to this tale in splendid colours. You are doing this a fucking disservice with that line. That is pretentious, because this book is fucking awesome.
I read the first series, and this is better. And I thought
the first series is
amazing.
Is that the Queen of the Black Coast? Because
that's brilliant, man. Fucking
yeah, that's
hell.
got 2 issues on Comixology as well available.
I'm going to put this out there. I think that Conan, if you want to pick a character to read, I don't think there's a more consistently brilliant set of comics than Conan books.
Yeah,
you know where you go, Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever it's going to be. There's no sort of adapted character that's got a more consistently brilliant run by just some amazing creators, even the Buscema, you know, the Barry Windsor Smith, all that sort of thing. It's just amazing. Yeah. This
came about. This was a striking cover, which I pretty much, you know, the usual. I mean, it's £3.19 for the digital, so it was on the top tier. But as soon as I looked at a couple of pages, I thought, yeah, I'll take a punt. It's 36 pages. Came out on the 10th of June. So I've been sat on it a couple of weeks, and then as soon as I read it, I was immediately like, "You need to fucking check this."
Yeah, I need to get an album of this because it's French. It's originally a French book.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It does feel like that. It feels like it's being translated, and partly because it's just so absolutely stunning.
Glen A bought the original out. Okay.
Yeah, and there's going to be. Going to be a couple more chapters to this, isn't there? I think
is it a three-parter? I've read this artist before. I only realized just before we started because he did Blackwater Lilies out of Europe Comics, which is equally as man breathtaking.
Yeah there's there's just one page of a horse drinking like some water, and there's no words or anything, but talk about setting a scene with the colours and just, it's absolutely stunning. And you put on top of that proper good action and character design, and there is a creature in this.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Conan versus the blind dinosaur is just the fucking best thing ever, man.
Yep. And and that fight is just, and the thing is, it just shows one of those, you know, you don't think, there is a fight at some point. For a lot of it, they're like, we need to go. We need to get out of here.
We're stuck here, aren't we?
Yeah. this thing is a beast.
The colour on that scene where he slices it is just incredible.
Yeah.
Would you define Conan as an anti-hero?
Yeah, it's funny because he's a thief and he's always shagging and stealing and fighting and
he's a bastard.
Getting drunk. Yeah.
But like, if you frame him in the world that he is, generally he's pretty much on the level. As in,
yeah, he's a king, you know, he leads a country, doesn't he, at one point? He's all things, isn't he?
I mean, Conan, I mean, all the tropes and the cliches that obviously the Conan can be. I think some of the most interesting parts of a Conan story are the way other people react to him, or the other people that meet him, and they think they clocked him. They know what he is immediately, and then they're like, oh, they're like really surprised.
He's a bit different. Yeah.
I've been reading Conan comics since I was a kid, man. I love them all. I think he's such a good cipher for different stories and different places. Yeah. And he's one of those characters who goes from being a kid, you can read stories about him as a kid, all the way through to like an ancient old king on a throne. And it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because he's generally like, he's kind of, like I said, he's got the criminal stuff, but there's like moments of flashes of humanity, and he'll
stand up for people. And,
he won't let shit go down that he thinks wrong.
And I think because of the different sections, like you say, you got the kid, you've got the king, you've got the bloke who's just a thief. You can read whatever you want. If you're not interested in him being a king, then you know there's loads of stories of him just being a badass assassin type.
Yeah, and the novels are good. The novels are apart from if you go sort of beyond what he wrote. I mean, Robert E. Howard's books are short stories about him.
Yeah.
There's not that many long ones. And even the stuff by Lynn Carter and Sprague de Camp and all these sort of people, there's some really great stuff out there. And it's just high adventure. It's just brilliant.
There's a couple of books. You think like you'd like the generic swords and sorcery, like the with the Lone Warrior. All the stories start off so different. There's one where he wakes up on the battlefield and everyone's fucking dead. And he's like, fucking hell. And then another one, it's all different. He ends up in a cell.
Yeah,
they're really well done.
He's an amazing writer, Robert E. Howard. I don't think he's down. And everyone goes on about Lovecraft, but there's this story, isn't it, that Lovecraft and him swapped a story and never declared it to the pulp company.
Mm. Really?
So one story is written by Lovecraft, and Robert E. Howard wrote one of Lovecraft's stories.
Mm. There is a really lot of those elements so in Conan of like kind of outwardly
there
gods
is,
that
of gods yeah. and yeah, 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 yeah.
Which is why one of the reasons that you know that sort of thing has such an appeal. You know, even if even if some of the original writers, certain opinions, you know, we won't go into that because some stuff doesn't age well at all, or is just downright fucking hideous. No.
Red Nails is a text story. It's the text story is at the back of this, isn't it?
Yes, which
but it's so small I can't read it.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought that was a. I mean, this is clearly meant to be an oversized print book, isn't it? That they've just done a
well, the
version
French
of.
One is, but this is just the American size comic. Because I brought physical copies of the first series, and it's just the normal American size, you know. To be fair, on an iPad, it reads okay, so you can read it. It's just the story from Weird Tales in 1936. This is from fucking 1936, folks, and it's not dry. It's not boring. It's amazing.
Like I say, it was fresh to me, and I'm on board for this tale. So, once again, £3.19.
Oof. Mate, get the previous story as well, man, because it's by I can't remember Giz's art name, the artist, but he's very Trakanoff, Mignola kind of style to it.
Yeah, which is you know the theme of these stars. Art by Pierre Allery, is that it? That's what.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. Oh, mate, so good. Fucking hell. Yeah, really good. And Jason Aaron does a great Conan as well. You know, Roy Thomas, all these guys, and Tim Truman's done some stuff. There's some great. Just throw a stone, and you hit a great Conan comic.
Nice.
That's it. Yeah. Interestingly, there's the rumor going around that Aaron, after doing the, you know, he did Star Wars, didn't he? I think when Star Wars came back to Marvel, and he did Conan when Conan got back to Marvel. Talk about him doing the new Predator comic.
Okay.
Yeah. I have faith in Aaron. I haven't got a huge amount of faith in Predator and Aliens at Marvel. But
Predator versus Iron Man holds no interest. None of those comics hold any interest in me. Like, I never liked him with Batman versus Predator or whatever. So,
Don't
give a shit. So we'll have to see.
Just make it a little story off on its own. We don't. To be fair, Conan is now in the Avengers, and I'm bored with that, man. I ain't got no time for that.
Oh, God.
And he's hanging around with the Black Cat and stuff, and I'm like, really? Mm. Yeah. But yeah, just make Predator and Aliens, just make them their own thing. We don't need them in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything because I feel pretty strongly about
it. I also got to point out that I know we sort of swore off Comixology and we've been talking about it a lot on this show. Someone told me that the Hawkeye, David Arger and Matt Fraction Hawkeye is like all on there for a fiver.
Nice. So, I'm doing with Comixology, because it is a, you know, as well as Comic House, that's my two sort of places to read, really, you know, especially in this time where you can't get out to comic shops as much, you know, look for the sales, look for the cheap indie comics, because there's some fantastic indie books on there. It's gone up to like, I don't know, £1 or £1 something or something like that for an American. It's just some fantastic books. The Sumerian issue one Red Nails, highly recommended, and another one I read, The Horserer issue two, it's just as fucked up as the first, so and I love it.
Can I just recommend as well, it's called Sonia Devereaux, Spider Shark and Snake Bear.
We saw a panel of this before we start recording, and I need to read this. we've got to go off and read lots of other comics now. So we're going to bid you adieu. So thank you very much for listening to this week's show.
Perhaps we should say we've had a load of questions in, so we will answer them next week. It's just we got a bit waylaid today.
We will
cover some questions next week.
Sometimes, you know, if we've got time for some questions, we'll put a question in. If it's just the three of us and we don't really want to talk to each other, we'll put some questions in. But but other than that, thank you for anyone who sends us questions, by the way. And if you've got any questions about the show or what we talked about this week, or if you've got any events, workshops, or any news that you want us to let the community know, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. And if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and join the community group that is amazing, and there's loads of great art and discussion going on there, and that is Awesome Comics Talk. Dan's always busy on there putting up art threads and the like.
I've been trying to keep it going on there.
There's lots of stuff to keep you busy.
We
on there
got a massive art and writing project starting up instead of the bi-weekly drawing challenge. We've got one starting up this week, so keep your eye out for that.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, keep your eye out for all our past, present, and future episodes on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, and just generally shout about the show, because that's much like some of the comics we read, that's the only way people will know about it. If you listen to us on other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on the soon to end pod, the end of Corona Lingus.
Don't laugh. Don't.
I've been listening to a lot of Tony's podcast output this week.
Oh, thank you, mate.
While I'm running.
Oh, nice. Thank you. I hope we keep you going. Keep the legs moving.
Yeah, I do. It's, I find it a lot more engaging.
Do you act like he's behind you and you're trying to get away from him?
I find it more engaging than music. Have a podcast going when I'm running.
Good stuff, man. Thanks, man. Yeah. So,
you're working my way for the vigilante.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, with Russell. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I like those little niche ones that we do. Yeah, I've got a couple coming up. So, good stuff.
Well, speaking of that, where can people find you online, etc., and that wonderful podcast, Tony?
You can find me neveronanything.podbean.com. if you want to buy our comics on Seriously Not Safe for Work comics, and go to www.tributepress.bigcartel.com. I got a review through from a psychologist that I work with, and it was, "Fuck me, Tony, you really are fucking mental, aren't you?" So that was lovely. I think that might be a pull quote on the collected edition eventually when that comes out. There you go.
That's a good one.
Dan, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Parler at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Making Parler great again.
Yeah.
I keep checking. I'm absolutely bewildered. I don't really understand.
Oh, there's some fucking rolling butters on there, man.
Amazing. Speaking of nutters, you can find me online on Instagram and social media at Jester Diablo. And you can follow the comic, which took a little bit of a hiatus this week. I had to catch up on some stuff. But on Instagram, if you go to Black the Comic, that's BLAK the Comic, for some sword and sorcery, weird, ethereal, black and white nonsense. You can find my work there. And I'm going to try do some more drawing over the next week. So,
rocking the suburbs, baby.
Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't know. It's a song. I like it.
All right, lovely.
So we need to know.
Do you want to leave the listeners with any lyrics, Dan?
No.
Love is a battlefield.
Yeah.
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes. I can't believe I just quoted wet, wet, wet.
I can't even say what I'm thinking because people have a go at me.
Yeah. So let's put a fork in this one right now. Thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you had fun. We did as well. So come back next week when we attempt to do this all over again.
Yes.
From Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and ignore all the idiots that are hanging about. And look after yourself, because we love you. So have a brilliant week and read loads of comics. Tell us about them so we can read them on here as well. And as always, what do they do, fellas?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
That's fucking gold. So close. That was, I mean, that was a silver star. I'll give you a silver star on that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Dad, don't sound so put out.
No, I'm not a brown star. I'm not bothered.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You'll try to
see ya.
Bye,
everyone. Bye.